Okay. Good morning, everyone, and it's a pleasure to finally we're able to have this shiur. It was obviously under different circumstances. Not only am I in Zoom, but all of you are in Zoom as well. And the topic that we're going to be discussing today is something that for, I would call it, I've been osik in this subject for many, many years. And it's something that is benafshi, which means that it's really something that that is part of me. It's very hard to move away to different subjects because this always keeps on coming back. And really, the Torah of Minhagim in general is a subject that is not a subject that you could learn and put aside. It's going to keep on coming back in every single psak that you have to give and every single halachic decision that you have to go through. You're going to have to contend with what the minhag is. Do we follow the minhag? What's called the minhag? And it's really going to shape the way you're posek. And what I want to speak about today, there's many different subjects that we could speak about, but I want to focus on today a central subject that has to do with what is the validity of a minhag, how far do we go to defend a minhag, and when we see that a minhag has problems, when we see that a custom has problems, when are we able to be mevatel the minhag? When can we say that the minhag is not really valid and we're able to be mevatel the minhag? The truth is that if once you understand this subject, you'll see that there are going to be different paths among the Sephardic poskim. We'll discuss today the path of Maran Hagaon Rav Ovadia Yosef. We'll discuss the path of Rabbi Shalom Esas. We'll discuss the path of other poskim that we'll see, memela, each one, what netiyah they have. It has many, many, many ramifications and how their whole derech hapsak is shaped and really their outlook on things are shaped. And that's why this is such an important subject to learn. So I just want to give you a little bit of background. You asked for a little bit of background. How I got into this. I was born and raised in a community in Montreal, Canada, where basically it was Morocco transplanted with the cold ground. Besides the cold ground, it was the same thing. And by me, it was always taken for granted. This is how we do things. All of the whole community followed minhagim, not because any thought was put into it. It was just, that's how things are done. There's no other way. Which is when I started learning in the yeshivot and started being exposed to the sfarim of Rav Ovadia Yosef and his son, should he have a long life, Rav Yitzchak Yosef. So I saw that they had questions on our minhagim and it was troubling to me. I said, what could it be that a whole community is just following minhagim with basically nothing, sometimes nothing to rely on, and we should change that minhag? And it was bothering me. By that time already, I was in Eretz Yisrael, and I decided to speak to Rabbi Shalom Misas and others. He was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim at the time. And I started discovering in my own research that not only these minhagim have what to rely on, but many times they circumvent many halachic issues, and they on the contrary, they should be kept. Not only you're not allowed to change them, but there's good reason why they are kept. And there was a rhyme and reason to everything. There was a very, very clear path that the Gedolei Chachmei Ma'arav took in how they were posek. And a lot of it is based on the minhagim hakedumim of the Tur, that the tour was the tour all many times writes Kach min haksfarad, and that's how the Moroccans followed, because the tour, this could be another shi'ur in itself, but the tour was from in a section in Spain that was heavily influenced by the Castilians. Castilia, there was a few sections in Spain. There was Castilia, there was Sevilla, there was Andalus, there was Catalonia. And whereas the Rajba and the Ramban were more in Catalonia, but Castilia, the Rosh, had heavy influence, as did the Abu Draham, and as did a few other key Rishonim. And that population mostly came to Morocco in 1492. And that's how the Derech HaPsak was formed. Maybe it could be that another time we should expand on a little bit more the influence of the Rosh in the Sephardic Psak, as the Abarbanel writes, HaRosh hu Rabbam shel kol HaSfaradim. The Marashach also writes that the Rosh was basically the main influence of all the Sfaradim, which is interesting why people learn the Hagdamat of the Bet Yosef. They see the Rosh, Rif, and Rambam are the three main poskim that the Bet Yosef bases himself on. And he writes, Asher gol Bet Yisrael nish'an alem, that all of Bet Yisrael relies on their psakim. So people think that the Shulchan Aruch wrote the Rosh is kind of like to throw in a bone to the Ashkenazim. They say, here, I have a posik of you all. It's b'chol not true. The Rosh had much more influence in Sephardic psak than the Rif and the Rambam. The Rif and the Rambam, after the Almohads came, there was much less influence of halacha. It was really the Rosh and his Talmidim who influenced Sephardic psak and Sephardic halacha tremendously, which is why the Bet Yosef says, along with the Rif and the Rambam, they're one of the top three that we decide how halacha is decided. So I saw that there was a very very strong reasoning. And at that point, it seemed to me that there was a need to really spread the knowledge, to write and show that at each custom is sourced. You know, we put tefillin on a ta'anit in mincha time. Wow, where does that come from? Well, it's the Bet Yosef that writes it in order to get mea berachot. You know, the Moroccan minag is to say aninu on fast days, besides Tisha B'Av, already from Arvi. Well, where does that come from? It happens to be the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. We do the bracha between Mila and Piriyah. We do the bracha of the Brit Mila between the Mila and Piriyah. Well, the other Sephardim don't do it. Yeah, they go against the Shulchan Aruch. The Moroccans go like the Shulchan Aruch over here. So each thing over time developed, and it was shown that there was many important details that had to be written. So I approached Rabbi Shalom Isas and I asked him that he should write this. He should write a book about this. And he, in a joking way, I guess he didn't think I would take him seriously, but he said, "Why don't you write it?" So I started writing. And when was this already? When I was 25 years old. And as Hashgacha Pratit would have it, 3 weeks before I moved to Los Angeles, at that time in Eretz Yisrael, I was learning by the kolal of Rabbi Azriel Orbach, the son-in-law of Rabbi Yashiv. And I used to go once every 2 weeks. I used to have a friend who would make me appointments once every 2 weeks with Rabbi Yashiv. And I would go consistently and speak, have questions with Rabbi Yashiv. Hashgacha would have it, I also used to live two doors down from Rav Ovadia Yosef. So I would pray with him very, very often in his house. It wasn't downstairs yet. And I would always like snoop around and look what he's writing and what he's being osik in and bother him. But so I had the zchut of getting a lot of Torah from Rav Yashiv and also seeing Rav Ovadia Yosef firsthand and his Derech HaPsak. And I used to speak to a lot of his Talmidim. I used to learn with some of his Talmidim and find out where he was coming from on a lot of those issues. So that helped clarify things for me tremendously. And when I published my Sefer, just 3 weeks after that, I moved to Los Angeles. I was teaching then also in Chappelle's at the time, and somebody there and maybe you know him actually, his name is Rabbi Gidon Shoshan. He's a son-in-law of Rabbi Willig. He basically made the shidduch to send me to Los Angeles, and that's where I was from we'll call it 2005. Now, why am I telling this to you? Because what happened was when I left, I didn't see that the Sefer started taking off in Eretz Yisrael. I just printed the Sefer and I left to LA. But in the meantime, it seems to be that there started to become a mini revolution, not only because of my Sefer. I think other Sfarim were coming out and there was more interest in the matter and people started to become more aware that really the Moroccan customs have what to rely on, and there are questions that could be answered. And because of that, the book gained a lot of popularity. And in meantime, there was two or three editions that came out. In 2010, I was called to go to Toronto to serve as Rosh Kol of the Sephardi Kol. There was a very interesting community because the Toronto community is heavily Spanish Moroccan. And Spanish Moroccans are known to keep their minhagim very, very stubbornly. In other words, they don't deviate from their minhagim left or right. They follow the minhag no matter what. And because of that, it seems to be that I learned a lot from the different places that are going on. As a matter of fact, in my newer edition of Magen Avot Ora Chaim, the third edition, there's two full kuntresim there that different rabbanim wrote about the minhagim of Tangier and Tetuan, which are different but come from the same root. And really, the minhagim of Spain, of the Spanish Moroccan, about the north of Spanish Morocco, really are indicative of many of the original minhagim that were in Morocco that over time changed. So that was for 5 years. And then Hashgacha had it that I came back to Los Angeles in 2015. And that's where I am still till today serving as Rosh Kolel of the Link Kolel in Los Angeles. We also have a Moroccan minyan on the side. Nice name to the synagogue called Magen Avot, like that name. And we try to do whatever we can regarding minagim. In the meantime, Yoredeya in Magen Avot came out, Evan Ezer, and I'm currently working on Choshen Mishpat. So that's more or less. As the years progressed, the whole purpose of me writing this book was to be a platform for questions and he'arot that over time people could come and they could ask and they could add on what their minhagim were. And that's really what's going on. A lot of people are adding on. I have a whole volume of shelot u'tshuvot of different minhagim that are mitchadesh. I mean, daily, I have different minhagim that I add on. Right now, I'm working on butter, the Moroccan custom by butter, or putting on. I'll tell you one thing that just came up recently. This is an unbelievable example. Before we start, whenever we put the Sefer Torah back, if you notice, it, by the Moroccans and by other communities, and this is not only minhagim Morocco. This is minhagim of Klal Yisrael. What happens is that we take off the tapuchim. We don't call them rimonim. We call them in Morocco tapuchim. Take off the tapuchim before we put the Sefer Torah back in the Aron HaKodesh. And when we take them out, somebody, usually a child, would put them on. We even sell the tapuchim. I didn't think about it. I thought, okay, it's on the tapuchim. Whoever puts them on. I didn't think there was any significance to this minhag. And as a matter of habit, I didn't pay attention. We would just put the Sefer Torah without taking off the tapuchim and without putting them back on, just because of laziness, just not paying attention. As I was learning in my daily halachot, I opened a sefer called Shivat Zion from Rav Ben Zion Mutzafi, and there he brings Kabbalistic sources why it's important dafka to put the tapuchim on the Sefer Torah and not to just leave it on. It has to do with the tapuchim are the keter that you're putting on a Kadosh Baruch Hu with different sefirot. Says his father, who is a big mikubal, would be very careful. Rav Ezra Atiyah would be very careful with that. And it seems to be that there's a strong reason for it. I actually opened up afterwards the Sefer Magen Avot. In the back, I have letters of different rabbanim who wrote their input on different minhagim. And one of those letters is from Rav David Peretz. Rav David Peretz is currently one of the big rabbanim in Panama. And he actually, he's a very big Talmud Chacham. And he wrote a bunch of comments to my of minhagim in my book. And actually, in one of the comments, he writes over there, our minhag is to take off the tapuchim before we go into the Aron Kodesh. And I don't know why. And it's amazing. In other words, I would have just said, okay, there's no reason. That's just why we do it. And that's it. But he paid attention to that detail. And he says he doesn't know why. And here I am, 10 years later, I found the reason why. Which is why you should always leave with a question. Instead of dismissing things, you see something, it could be a cane because of nothing. Could be not. But each thing has to be dealt with kovid rosh and understanding where it came from and why it came. And then as a Talmid Chacham, you could examine it. You could examine the issue at hand. And then you decide according to Psak if this is a legitimate minhag or not a legitimate minhag. But not just to dismiss things like that is not the derech of the Mesorah that we have of Talmidei Chachamim. It's something that we have to appreciate. And look, something like this of the Tapuchim that I thought was insignificant, the reason why we take them off before we put them in the Aron HaKodesh is because when we take them out, there's an inyan davka to put them on al pi Kabbalah. But that would have been lost forever by us if we just dismissed that detail and nobody paid attention to it. So that's just a recent example that just came by. So I think that's enough of a hakdama. And what the last point that I just want to leave you regarding that hakdama is that you should always strive to understand what the derech hapsak is from your parents and grandparents and understand where they came from, because whatever edah you come from, the minagim are deeply rooted. They have what to rely on, and before you're mevatel minag, you have to know very well the sugya of minagim, and then you could bring it in front of gedolei haposkim to know what can be kept and what can't be kept, and that's the basis of our psak. Because once a person is going to start to make light of they didn't know anything. Well, maybe Har Sinai also they didn't know. I mean, once you break the chain, God forbid, that just brings to a zilzul, and it's one of the yisodot adat that really could descend very, very quickly. So that's an important point. Okay. Interesting. Throughout the years, I also saw there's tremendous siyata dishmaya. Rav Volbe once told me that a person knows that he's on a proper path if he sees perot coming out and siyata dishmaya coming out from the actions. And I saw in this particular subject, I kept on seeing so many times siyata dishmaya things went my way. For example, there was one Rav who I originally wanted him to contribute to the Sefer, his knowledge, and he was very cold. He didn't want to speak to me. He felt that I consulted with others, that it wasn't on his derech, wasn't part of his derech, and he just basically kicked me out of the house. And okay, so I said, that's what it is. That's what it is. I won't have him in the Sefer. Little did I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had other plans in mind. What happened was then I was on a flight going from Eretz Yisrael, I think it was for the Toronto, maybe a stopover. That Rav, basically the only religious Jew on the plane, got on. And maybe there was other, but wasn't so many religious people on the plane. And he dafka got on, and I saw him right away, and I arranged that the seats should be switched. So he sat next to me for 10 hours, and we went through the whole sefer from beginning to end. and he added in all of his hearot, and everybody gained tremendously from it. Siyata Dishmaya. You know, that he's dafka on the same flight, that we got on the same seat. And I saw many, many examples as years went on, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to send the Siyata Dishmaya to discover more and more minhagim. Okay, now the subject to discuss today is the validity of minhagim in general. And the reason why I think this is an important subject is because this was challenged recently heavily by the current chief rabbi of Israel, Hagon Rav Yitzchak Yosef Shlita, and he speaks numerous times on this subject in particular, and he doesn't agree with some of the points that I'm about to present to you. And I thought that that's a very interesting starting point because it'll get us to understand where the crux of the machloket is between a lot of psakim that are kept nowadays from other communities and the Derech HaPsak of Rav Avadi Yosef that changed many psakim. And a lot of them he didn't. Rav Avadi Yosef had deep regard for minhagim, just certain minhagim he wanted changed and certain not. I think Rav Yitzchak Yosef takes it a step further and he changes more minhagim, but that we'll see where this lies. So I don't have all my sfarim in front of me. A lot of my sfarim are in boxes, but let's start with as much as I can. The Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah Daf Tet Vav Amud Bet brings a machloket tanaim in regards to the question regarding ma'aser, whether you go batar chanata or batar lakita. And when the Gemara is mitpalpel back and forth, it leaves off with the question that really you should go, and it says really you go batar chanata azlinan. We go batar chanata. When Rav Yochanan heard that, ishtik, he was quiet, even though that wasn't his opinion, but it seems to be he conceded. So the Gemara says, why was he quiet? Am I ishtik? How could you tell me it's asr and you go batar chanata? I had a minag not that way. So the Gemara answers, b'makom isura ki nahagu shafkinan lei. In other words, bitmiya Rashi says, in a case where you're going to have a minhag and there's an isr against the minhag, you're going to go after the minhag, bitmiya. Of course, if there's an isr, you're mevatel the minhag, no question whatsoever. So there's a stira to this sugya from other places. There's a Gemara Masechet Menachot, Daf Lamed Bet Amud Aleph, that discusses parashot, situmot, and petuchot. And there also, it brings that we follow a minhag, even if it seems to be that there's a question on the minhag. And by Chalitza, Rabba Bar Kahana Amarav, Im Yavo Eliyahu V'yomar Cholzin B'minhag Shom'in Lo. If Eliyahu is going to come and going to say, really, we use a min'al for chalitza, we listen. En chotzim min'al, en shomin lo. And if he tells us, don't do it, we don't listen to Eliyahu Anavi. Why? Shikvar nahagu ha'am besandal. Because the minag is already to use a sandal. So the Gemara, you see that even though the halacha shouldn't be that you should use a sandal, but nevertheless, since the minag was that way, even if Eliyahu comes and tells us it's not that way, we still follow the minag. So it seems clearly that you do follow the minag, even if it's neged isura, which doesn't make sense, lechora. Why would you follow a minag if it's against the nisur? So there is a famous maharik and a prichadash on this subject. It's the famous machloket between the maharik and prichadash. I think it was made more famous in light of Rav Yitzchak Yosef challenged this particular piece in my sefer. This is, if you want to look further as some of the Maharik Mekomot on this sefer, I'm going to speak about a little bit more of what's not written in the sefer, but it's in Magen Avot in the Shrashim Shoresh Aleph. That's a lot of what I'm discussing now. So there's a Maharik that discusses that they had a minhag in their area. The Maharik Maharik Kolon was Kimat Arishon, and he discusses that by Shabbat Bereshit, a person in the community offers money to pay for the light of the Bet Knesset so that he should get Rishon. Instead of Kohen, he should be Rishon. Okay. So The Kohen didn't want to leave the shul. Okay? He said, "What? I'm not going to go. It's my ischut. I'm allowed to go up Kohen." So the Marid discusses whether the Kohen could is right, or since there was a minhag that whoever buys the electricity, they go up first. And he said, "L'aniu da'ati nir'eh, shafilu ayato Kohen chacham keshimon ben Azai, he frees al midotav." Even if the Kohen was a great chacham and he's not a ma'aretz, nevertheless, he had no right to stop this minhag. They always had a minhag that whoever would buy the ma'or for that year goes first. The en lanu lishanot haminagot shenagu avotenu hakadmonim hasidim v'anshei ma'aseh ve'al kayotze ba'em amru hanachlan misal im enam nevi'im b'nei nevi'im. And we're not mevatel the minhag of Am Yisrael. And if they're not, Nevi'im b'nei Nevi'im. That's the Marik in Shoresh Tet. And he says also, this is why we dance on Simchat Torah, even though there's an Isur of dancing. But nevertheless, Lichvod HaTorah, that was our Minhag. And even if it's an Isur Shvut, which is an Isur Rabbanan, B'makom Minhag, it's allowed. So you see that the Marik really understood strongly, like the Gemara in Masechet Menachot, that you go according to the custom, even if there is a pickbook, even if it could be that there's an Isser in the Minhag, that's, you go according to the Minhag. Yeah? Minag Mevatel Halacha, even in Isurim. That's how you would call it. The Pri Chadash goes to town with this. He says, can't be. Siman Tav Tzadivav, Inchot Pesach, Klal Asiri. He says, I'm sorry. From the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, you see, you don't go according to Minhag, you go according to Halacha. And he says that even though we have a Gemara in Menachot that seems to see not that way, but there's a Gemara Ta'anit in Daf Chavav Amud Bet that says that we don't follow that Gemara in Masechet Menachot, and we don't follow that we don't follow the Gemara in Menachot. So therefore, he has a long arichut, the Pri Chadash. And he says, basically, his famous words are the following. I'll read you the famous words because this is where things are going to get a little bit messy. He says, he has a rivash. The rivash says, "Kol minhag sheyesh bo ktzat pikpuk al piyadin, ra'uy levatlo." Any minhag that has a question according to halacha, it would be a proper thing to be mevatel this minhag. And he continues, he says, the Marik is wrong. But something that's clear, that's an Isur de Rabbanan. We bang with a hammer of a blacksmith. What does that mean? Why follow a minhag? If it's asur, of course you can't follow the minhag. It's the rabbanan. Chomer dibre sofrim yotem dibre Torah. The truth is that Avad in Perek Aleph of Yilchot Maaser Shel Halacha Gimel says explicitly that by isur de rabbanan it could be a minhag trumps an isur de rabbanan regarding Maaser Charuvin. That Avad seems to say that's how he understands the sugya in Masechet. In Masechet Rosh Hashanah, that the other opinion Rav Yochanan held, that really, Isur de Rabbanan is moved to the side for a minhag. But so there is an avad against the Pri Chadash in that regard. But even if we say that we're not going to go with that avad, we're going to say basically there's a machloket. It seems to be between the Marik and the Pri Chadash. Okay, so. This is a lot of what I wrote, and I came out with what the conclusion that comes out is, if you look throughout the generation by the Acharonim, you'll see that they always defend the minhag, and they are mekayem the minhag, even in cases where there's a question against the minhag. For example, the Maram Padava, Siman Ayin Chet, an early source, was asked by Haftarat Yonah that people would be mitargem after 3 psukim, even though the Gemara says only after 10 psukim you should be mitargem. So he says like this, and I'll read you the Lashon. Be'emet, milta deder tamua hu aminag hazeh. This minag is tamua. Achen lo ze haderech leisha'en al binotenu. That is not the path to rely on our knowledge. Ulivatel minhag kadum. And to nullify a minhag. Ach tzarich levakesh bechol oz. A person has to ask with all his might. Limtso smach liyashev oto. Vekacha asu kol kadmonenu kaasher matzu minhag shel timahon. Veze yimatze malcha lerov batosfot v'sher poskim. Verich liyashev minhag. So therefore the Maran Padava says the derech is not stumped to be mevatol minhag. You have to try to find the smach to it. That's what he writes, and he finds the smach to it. The Marashdam in Yoredei Siman Kuf Tzadi Gimel also writes regarding a tzibur that would eat vegetables in the shuk and they wouldn't see if there was klaim or not. So other people were machmir, and he says en leharher achar minhag ki gadol kocho ve'en lanu lishalon meshanu bekadmonenu kmo shikatav bari kolon. So he writes, just like the Mari Kolon writes, ve'al ze amru hanach. Ve'ech yitachen shitipol ha-ta'ut neged kol chachmei ador. How could it be that a ta'ut would if everyone is noeg one way, all of a sudden to say that they're mistaken, can't be. And he brings many sources to this. The Marasham brings many sources to this. The Steich Hemed has a very long arichut, and in Klalim Minhag, Mem, Simen Lamed Zayin, and Lamed Chet, the Steich Hemed comes out and he says that it's really a machloket, whether halacha is nidche against the minhag, and the Pri Chadash says you go after halacha, but the Zera Yaakov and others say even if you have a yachid against the rabbim, you go after the yachid, and he brings from the Maran Padava, from the Marashdam, from Tosfot and the Mordechai. So it's really the Zdei Chemed that crystallizes this and makes a machloket between the Pri Chadash and the Marik. And the Pri Chadash himself says, I don't follow the Marik. The Marik says, you don't follow me, you follow Minagim. And I say, no, if there's a peak book, you don't follow Minagim. Now, that's what comes out the Father's Dechemed understands. Because of this, there was many Minhagim that